Yeah, so basically like orc oil dicks. Painters. Yeah, orc dicks. Okay, here's the thing about turpentine.
Let's get it'll shrink back your on
orc turpentine will here. Shrink your orc dick, Joel. Stop using turpentine for your oil paints.
It's October. Jesus. I've got my orc dick out and I'm ready to party.
Put that away. Put it away. We're recording a podcast. I'm sitting too close to you for you to have that in your hand while we're recording.
golly. It has been quite some fucking time.
It has been a minute.
We recorded.
What happened? What happened to
I'm
us?
I'm dying.
We did some things.
You got married.
Yeah, that was weird.
It's true.
During Mecha a pandemic.
Genre got married.
Yeah, I did that. There's
That's
a Mrs. Mecha genre now.
I had several teeth removed out of my mouth.
Honestly, we're going to go into a little bit more detail in the full episode that we release, but yeah. dental surgery. Yeah. We talked about like miniature painting last episode and gunpla. There's a third in that triumvirate, and the third is dental surgery.
It's about as much fun as comparing the two.
Yeah,
as I say, because Phil also had surgery.
No, I had two teeth break.
Oh,
for no reason. Like no reason.
That happens sometimes.
I was straight up just having like a granola bar or something, and like two teeth just straight up just broke. So I lived with that for a month, and then they finally got me in and fixed those last week. So
you buy your granola bars from McMaster Car?
No, like they were like soft. It was the soft ones. I normally get the dry oats and honey ones because I'm thrifty. I got nice ones and they killed me.
Your teeth suction. Got it's the suction, right? Your teeth got used to Nutri-Grain.
Pulling it out.
Yes,
give me the choppers.
In the dental industry, we call that the granola suction. It's the most effective way to remove teeth.
It's better than punching yourself in the face.
I've been punched so many times and I never broke a tooth.
They don't teach them both in dental school. They only teach the granola bar method in dental school.
That's all you need.
The punching in the face.
Nature
you
got
to go to Nature's Valley, Nature's Valley University.
So the last episode we were talking about gunpla and miniatures, and kind of got into this weird like circle debate of all kinds of different aspects of it, and we did talk about how we were going to come back and talk about more of it, go into it a little bit further. And then it just led into this, again, this crazy, just fucking dog chasing its tail. Yeah. Art is subjective and art is. Yeah. You have to say, we actually listened to it.
And it was just like, what exactly else did we intend to say about
this? The problem is my opinion kind of evolved as the episode went on. And so now I think totally different things about this
for real
before.
Okay. Okay. Well, I mean, if that has value, if that's something you want to talk about, but.
Yeah, let's roll the intro music and then we can talk about that in the episode. Welcome to Premonition of Paint. This is a kind of a side podcast put on by two members of the Cutting Mat podcast. That it would be me, Mecha Genre, and this guy named Joel,
who
goes by True Gunpla on the interwebs. We've got another guy here also, someone who's been miniature painting for thousands of years. Honestly, we found your picture in a couple of old demonology textbooks that I found in the back of my closet the other day.
You weren't supposed to find those.
Yeah, you're actually, you look good in these etchings. This guy, Phil from Phil Build Stuff. He's got a face for etchings. People say that a lot, I think. Yeah.
Face for etching?
You got a face for etchings.
You, my friend, you should be in chiaroscuro.
I got a voice for photographs. It's fine. So we've, last episode, right?
Yeah.
That episode was originally going to be a two-part episode. Let me tell you why it's sort of not going to be that. we had an episode which originated from the basic question, which is more difficult? Which hobby is more difficult? Or which one takes more skill, effort, talent, what have you, to accomplish, gunpla or miniature painting. And last time we recorded, my opinion was solidly that miniature painting is harder than Gunpla. Truthfully. And since then, I've been looking at some stuff, and now I don't think these two things are comparable. I don't think these two media are comparable. What do you guys think?
I'm kind of on board because a lot of the opinions that I had since I had three extra teeth in my mouth.
That changes your life.
Have drastically changed.
You got wisdom teeth. You got unwisdom teeth. You get the unwisdom teeth removed. You're more wise.
Yeah. I converted to Christianity. More wise now.
I converted to Christianity, Satanism, and then immediately lost all of it.
Yeah. My viewpoint was kind of on the fence between the two. I was leaning towards more like miniature stuff being more and objectively like skillful because of the starting points are different. And then I realized, like everything that we all kind of do in life, art is super subjective, and it is super subjective even though the mediums are kind of close and parallel and really do share a lot of the same skills. I've been getting a lot into like toy painting and designer toys and Sufibi and painting and all that shit. And having that conversation with a lot of those artists, they're just like, what? If it looks cool, it looks cool. That's it. Like that, right. That's the discussion. I'm like,
that's it.
Fuck, why you're right, dude. Matter? What am I doing here?
What kind of standard is this? The standard is, does it look cool?
Then I turned around. Who are and, like, you? I pushed down an old man IPMS and went, nerd! Now buy my $500 Godzilla toy, please.
Right? Please.
You have to. I have to feed my family. I have 27 cats. They're all named Greg.
You're not wrong.
No, well, the only 26 of them are named Greg.
Yeah, the other one's named
so Patty. Technically,
the other one is Steve.
The other one, that'd be a little bit of difference. But Phil, how are you feeling since then? Since you've had teeth or less teeth in your mouth?
My feelings are much the same as they were before. Really, I don't think for a second that either one is inherently more difficult to do. Each one has its own skill set and they've got their own issues or whatever. I think that when it comes
to... We all do, Phil.
I think that when it comes to which one has a higher standard set by its most excellent practitioners, the minis are far and away the... If there was a winner in this situation, come on. Like... Show me the best Gunpla in the world, and I'll show you a Carol Kenev miniature. And shut up, you know, it's just it's okay. It's okay. Well,
so that's the standard that I used to use, and that is why I came to the conclusion that I did. Uh-huh. So I fully relate to that, but there's other factors here. For example, Gunpla's a lot newer.
It is.
Gunpla has many fewer serious contests, and very true. When you say, give me the best Gunpla in the world and give me the best miniature in the world, there's a good chance that the best miniature in the world was entered into one of those miniature contests. And there is a very low probability that the best Gunpla in the world has ever been in a contest. Because
for that matter.
We have idea.
You are right. That's cool. A good point.
It's this like weird, it's a new kind of, people just started taking this seriously, you know, like in the
new world.
Oh God, no, please never.
It's that song.
Hang on.
It really is though. But it's dope because it is growing pretty quick.
No. And I think that's one of the exciting things about it.
I saw Gunpla Kit in Target and like half of me was pissed because I was like, support local shops, you fucking assholes. But the other half of me was like, you know what? Hey, there's a Gunpla Kit in Target?
Yeah,
Target that means is fucking Joe Blow's gonna get in this fucking thing and like it's good.
That was where I got my first one in college. I got a Neue Zeal. Yeah, I got a little SD Neue Zeal. I had no idea what it was. I just thought it looked cool. I was in college.
So like you went in for like Triscuit socks and Gunpla. That's amazing.
Yeah, no, totally. I went in to get like, you know, a toothbrush and I came out with an SD Neue Zeal because I was like, this thing is crazy. I don't need to eat this week.
The weirdest checkout I had was last night. I had I got ant traps or something, or some type of like rodent trap, a thing of spoons, because evidently our spoons went missing, and a cat scratcher and a Star Wars Lego set.
Perfect.
And I was like, you know, whoa, hey, this is a good little haul right here.
No, you ever get that look? You get that look from the
all the time.
So they're like, what are you really?
Well, I always try to get Rachel to come with me, because I'm like, they won't judge me because they've seen I've had sex in my life before. Like,
true.
Please come with me.
Oh, along the same lines, I did. Have you ever like bought a cucumber and condoms at the same time? Because
no, mayonnaise and condoms though. That was a weird one.
That's a totally normal. That's fine. That's a normal thing to buy. But see, the cucumber and condoms, you get like a different look, and I know this because I've done both
this week.
Man. Wow. So spoons, huh? Where'd all your spoons go? Wait, hang on a second. Welcome to the Spoons podcast. This is Brandon.
I like that.
I go by Mecha
Genre. It took us
on
that
internet.
Long. Where, sorry.
Where'd your spoons go?
Dude, I don't know, because I was eating the soft food. It was great, man. I was eating ice cream. Like, I was eating ice cream every day.
Oh,
and I lost like 10 pounds, and then I gained it back in like 2 days straight off of fucking. Well, because you're deprived of anything good. And I was like, bro, I just want a fucking I feel like Randy from Trailer Park Boys. I want a real fucking burger, Mr. Leahy. And I gained like all my weight back immediately. Yeah, it was terrible. But somehow,
what a fucking burger. And I ate 10 of them.
Well, but somehow, because of all the soft foods, literally all of these spoons, I must have been like throwing them or eating them or like shoving them under the bed or something when I was done.
Are your iron levels normal? Because if you're eating only ice cream, you must have gotten like little chunks of spoon, I think.
Probably
kept your iron up. Yeah, it's good for you.
It was good and it was bad. You know, good, bad, and the ugly.
What flavor ice cream you want today, Joel? I want the meatloaf flavor. Give me the meatloaf ice cream.
I want waffle ice cream.
Oh, waffle ice cream. Get a bacon and eggs.
I just want there to be a good and bad. Isn't there a good and the bad and the ugly ice cream flavor?
I'm sure there's
if
a
not,
Ben & Jerry's
that should be it.
Does it taste like licking Clint Eastwood's face?
Mint chocolate chip with waffle and
this
then
tastes
like
an Ennio. This tastes like an Ennio Morricone soundtrack.
it sounds like what I think Replicator Foods tastes like in the Enterprise.
Like, wow, this chicken is so good. It tastes like reconstituted protein slop. Just like the meatloaf tasted.
I'm going to make an announcement here. There will be a Star Trek Next Generation bonus episode because I've been rewatching it with Rachel.
Oh, we've been rewatching it this week too, baby. I'm in.
It's so good. All right, Phil's going to come with us.
Yeah, no, I'm in.
Here's the thing about Star Trek The Next Generation. If you're having a bad time in your life, if you're struggling, if something isn't right in the world, if you feel
something
like
is getting ripped out of your head.
If you're climbing up a ladder and you hear something splatter, if you're having a difficult time, you should rewatch Star Trek The Next Generation because a true utopian.
It's a life-affirming experience.
Seriously,
it
is.
Do not try and watch fucking Deep Space Nine because
ever for any reason.
Now is an especially bad time to watch a politically charged drama. Deep Space Nine is there's a time and a place for it.
If your comic relief is a space capitalist,
Rachel kind of like,
oh geez, Armin Shimerman is such a good actor, but
I know,
well, how much like, latinum would it take?
Too much.
Well, like Rachel kind of catfished me into it because she was like, I was like, let's watch Star Trek, and she's like, all right, she puts it on. Then I see Picard as the Borg. I'm like, fuck yeah, the Borg episode.
Oh, yeah,
Lacutus.
And then it's like hyper focused on this dude. I'm like, wait a second.
And like mega just, intense.
Like, he was like gonna kill him, and I'm just like, no, Picard's a good dude. Fuck you, man. Like, it made me mad all from the start.
Dude,
we'll save for the bonus episode. Oh
yeah, this is
going to
be a good bonus episode.
I'm still on season one with that, and like it's so different. Like, I'm so used to the later seasons where like they really hit their stride and everything had dramatic weight, and then the first season it's just what ridiculousness is this?
Like, there's going to be a court? What the hell? What is happening?
It's the first episode.
What is this crystalline entity?
They dropped Q on the first episode.
Where's Jonathan Frakes' beard? It's my favorite character.
Why does he keep jumping over the chairs?
What's going on? I do love, so this bonus episode, I assume, will be talking about the set building and model making, because I have a lot of opinions about Star Trek. My personal
but
model making.
Let's save it for the bonus episode.
Yeah,
let's
we should do
blue balls on the fucking next gen, because it's happening.
Oh, God. Okay,
I'm gonna have the blue balls for this one. But anyway, let's do it.
Yeah.
So we talked about.
If you want to get that episode, check out the Patreon. That's how you're going to listen to it, because it's going to be a Patreon-only episode, just like the Star Wars one, you
oh my God.
Nerds.
What?
The Star Wars one was, yep, that was something.
That was an episode. That was great.
Didn't even call me for a Star Wars. Whoa.
Oh, we got the next one. There's plenty more. But
plenty more.
Following tradition, I think it was like the second or first episode. I mean, we're only on the fourth episode of Premonition of Pain. But following tradition, like I've stated before, Brandon and Phil here are driving me to the toy store, and I'm just learning from their conversations along
the
way.
Stop that.
But I had another huge fucking oh shit, oh fuck epiphany moment when Phil, you kind of had this moment, and then this dude stole your, he's pretty much Professor X. made a video about it.
I should be flattered.
How did he know?
Dude thinks the same. I mean, Justin said the same thing. Like we were like racing each other to saying, I just want to work with oils on my next one. And then the fucking video comes out. I think Marco is like priming the world for better painting. Basically, everybody watch Marco Frissoni's videos. He's smarter than everyone. Just watch his stuff. He's good.
You gotta love. Never. You find a person like that, you watch all their videos. Yep, I agree.
So
I've never watched his videos before, and then like watching that being the first one I watched.
Oh, man.
I've literally been telling you to watch that dude's videos for years. That was the first one you. God damn it! Nobody listens.
Well, let me rephrase it. That's the first one I watched paid attention to who the person was versus what they were doing.
Fair enough.
He pretty much did a whole entire now. Here's where the clickbaity shit comes in. He did the whole entire mini's not done with oil, but he base colored just the colored bits he needed to base color, and that was it. And then 98% of it was done in oil.
Well,
because I was like, how do you base coat in oil?
The specific video that we're talking about here is on Marco Frissoni NJM. That's his YouTube. He's one of my favorite miniature painters. He's a fantastic teacher. I'm pretty sure I've mentioned him on the show before. He put out a video a couple of weeks ago about painting entirely in oils on your miniatures. And it's, and like Joel said, he didn't really do it 100% in oil, but he did a quick value sketch in black and white. And then like basically a slightly fancy zenithal. And then contrast painted it real quick to get the base tones down, to have an acrylic base to work on. And then the rest was all wet blended and smudge blended with oils. And it only took 2 hours, and it's gorgeous. It's
so
gorgeous.
I want to talk really quick about that that contrast paint acrylic base.
Uh-huh.
Because that's actually going to be fairly important in a case like this. You can do an entire miniature in oils. That is completely possible if you're
Absolutely.
Willing to wait the cure time for oil paints, because that waiting step between your base and your blending coats is going to be critical for coverage. And
now, I have a question, and I'm sure the audience has this question too, because I've had this question. I'm very new with working with oils.
So am I, to be honest.
When can you varnish an oil?
And always.
Immediately after you finish applying it, if you want to.
That was my question.
I'd let it dry for about 10 minutes just to be safe, especially with the quantities that you're going to be painting in on a miniature. It's not like you're going to be like, you know, daubing on oil. Like we're basically glazing with oils here.
My question is because I've been using it actually mainly on toys, on like Legend 6-inch figures and shit like that.
Some
like weathering. And the one I was using on it's a Clone Trooper figure, and it's very glossy. Uh-huh. And I applied the layer, and I've let it sit for like a week.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Oh, I picked it up, and it just smudged right off. I'm like, fuck,
well,
dude.
Right,
like,
right. That's oil never really dries.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, but there's a reason.
There's a chemical reason. The chemical reason for that.
Paint restoration exists because I could sit down with the Mona Lisa right now with some mineral spirits and destroy it. But I could also reactivate every bit of oil that's on that painting right now with just a little bit of some kind of terpenoid.
They're solvent-based paints are tricky. However, you get beautiful blends with solvent-based paints.
Totally.
Because as you blend from one color to another, you're reactivating the, you know, your secondary color. So from primary to secondary, you're able to effectively blend on the model, which is awesome.
Yeah, you're blending wet on wet the whole time. If any of you guys have done wet on wet blending or loaded brush blending or any of the other billion things that we've come up with acrylic paints to mimic the way oil paints work, the difference is that it never dries, so you can just keep playing with it until it's beautiful.
That's right. It never dries. Effectively, it never dries. It does reach a point when it is unworkable, however. So, if you've used acrylic with a retarder, if you use acrylic with any kind of life extenders, that is a good experience. But after 6 hours, you can't keep working that paint. But you probably could with oils, honestly. 6 hours is nothing.
No, you absolutely could. You could keep doing it forever.
For the oil piece.
But, and Joel, part of the reason that stuff came off on your hand was that it was you had thinned it. It's oils will kind of cake up and solidify, like they will, quote unquote, dry after so long. It takes a long damn time. They can still be reactivated from that state. But if they're thinned and reduced to kind of like an oil slick glaze, like I'm assuming you were working with for like oil washes and gunk washes and stuff, that it deteriorates the integrity of the paint to the point where it's always just going to be kind of a sludge. So you wipe off whatever you don't need and then varnish it and it's locked in and you're good. Go on about your business just like you would with any other kind of paint.
Well, there's another chemical component to that as well. If the surface of your plastic figure is glossy and the plastic doesn't play well with your oil solvent, with your mineral spirits or your turpentine or whatever you happen to be using, you won't ever develop a chemical bond between your surface and your paint.
It's just sitting there.
That's worth noting.
Yeah, sits right on top.
But so, with the exception of really exotic materials, like I don't know what Sifubi is made out of or whatever, but with any of the types of plastic that any model I've ever worked on or any resin I've ever worked on, any of those materials do not chemically interact with odorless mineral spirits.
Yep.
So you're okay. That's not going to cause
you. Yeah, this was just a fucking Hasbro toy.
Without knowing what the plastic is, it's hard to say. But like
polypropylene is going to react differently than polystyrene, which is going to react differently than polycarbonate, which is going to react differently than ABS. Like you've got
all
a bunch
of
different
things.
Options.
But now I know that I can just fucking top coat this shit. Cause like I'm sitting here like, how long do I have to wait for this to dry? Cause one of them was like a commission piece. And I was like, I don't fucking know what to tell this dude because I'm sitting here like thinking
still wet.
Hey, dude, it's been 2 weeks and I'm dumb and I didn't know how to gloss coat your thing. So now it's ready if you're listening.
If you do, your commission is prepared, give me till morning. It'll dry. If you do find yourself in a tough spot where it becomes apparent that there's some kind of chemical weirdness going on, and you will know, if it does hit that spot, then chances are pretty good that unless it's just a complete mess, you can kind of futz it and lock it in with varnish anyway and give yourself a fresh surface to start over from.
Yeah.
But
I know I'm doing after this podcast. I'm varnishing.
Well, varnish can save the day in some cases.
But you're talking about chemical weirdness, meaning like the organic solvent that you use to dissolve the oil paint causes a problem with your surface. I'm talking about absolute incompatibility between your surface and your solvent. So
like a phobic contact, or is that what you're talking
about?
Well,
it's not even a phobic contact, just a pigment sitting on top of a glossy surface, just waiting to be wiped away. That's a big problem. And
you can't lock that in?
Varnish will solve that problem. Varnish
will
lock
it
in.
Okay, yeah. I was confused. Totally. I was like, where are you going with this, bro?
Yeah, yeah.
No, finish this thing or not?
All right, just let me finish.
That's where I'm going with it. That's,
am I fucked or not?
No, you're good.
Yes. Yes, no, it's over. It's over, Joel. You have to burn that model. You have to burn it. That's the other thing about oil paints.
It's not even a model. It's a toy. It's a $20 toy.
I just told him it was done.
No, every mistake you make, you have to. Yeah.
So that's just got burn mistakes. All my models.
Let's talk about mistakes and oil paints. Oils are cool. They are solvent-based paints, a lot like lacquers. Enamels are oils, actually. So if you ever use enamel paints, enamels are oils. They can they require, be reactivated.
They require turbo death solvents to function.
Yeah, turbo death solvents is a technical term. So mineral spirits,
if I need lighter fluid to get stuff off of something, I'm using the wrong paint. I'm sorry.
I've heard gasoline. Well, I've heard people use gasoline.
It does. It works. Gasoline will work.
It works. Don't
it do will, it. It will dissolve polystyrene. Be careful with that.
It will blow your house up.
It also will catch you on fire.
Yeah, it's will not good.
It? So will lighter fluid. Let's test it.
Actually, so will mineral spirits. Be very careful. These are all flammable.
They're all flammable.
Wait, is turpentine?
All of these organic solvents are volatile. You can smell them from a long distance. That's why. It's because they're volatile. Well, they get into the air very easily.
Except for odorless mineral spirits. That,
okay, so wait, that is not flammable.
Smelly.
To a lesser extent. But odorless mineral spirits do still smell, even though they are
labeled
odorless.
Yeah, they have an odor. It's a weird odor. It's not bad.
Man, I grew up painting oils with turpentine, though. Like, this stuff literally smells like air to me by comparison.
Yeah, God, turpentine. My first ever oil paint attempt, I painted an Eldar Falcon with oils using turpentine. Really? Yeah.
Wow.
I blended turpentine?
And it didn't kill the plastic.
No, well, I primed it real well beforehand. So, I'll be damned. Two layers of Krylon primer, Krylon black. I blended it from white through to blue through to black at the stern. That thing looked, I mean, it was.
I bet it was nice. Bitching. Yeah.
It was a great blend. I still have it around here somewhere. I replicated the blend, of course, 2 years later with an airbrush with acrylics. Because at the time, I didn't have an airbrush, and I was intimidated by airbrushes. Somehow, airbrushes were more scary to me than turpentine. Literal turpentine was less scary.
I was super intimidated by airbrushes in the beginning. I completely understand.
It was weird. Good-looking Falcon, though. And I remember it taken days and weeks to set up until eventually I just sprayed it down with varnish and it worked.
See, airbrushing for me at first was very intimidating. I mean, this kind of actually loops back around to what we were talking about in the differences between a lot of different mediums is that, and also why my brain had a big, huge fucking boner when I watched this, it was a Mark's, this is the first
Marco,
thing.
Mark, yeah.
Marco, watch his video because
you had a brain boner.
Yeah, no, for real. Because like,
I would marry Marco for Sony right now if he asked me to.
You're thinking with your brain boner, man.
I do it.
I got into Gunpla, and really painting and art and hobbying and all that shit from Gunpla. So my first initial experience with airbrushing is watching these crazy articulate dudes in Japan and all over the world do these mind-blowing things that are so accurate and so detailed, and they're very, you know, one pass, it has to be right.
Oh, yeah.
And seeing, and then again, going back to like the toy shit and then watching people like Mark from Max Toy Co. painting a Sufibi figure where it's just like, hey, kind of do whatever looks cool, makes you happy. Yeah. And
if you don't like it, change it. Do something different. Well,
but for me, I rarely ever actually sit down and say, here's a color scheme for a thing, or here is my plan for this. I kind of go, I like these colors. I would like to do, the green and purple SD. I was like, I just want to do something that's lime green and purple, like the Evangelion colors.
And that's 100% awesome.
Like, but there's what I like with like the airbrush, or like with oil paints and the kind of like Sufibi style of airbrushing, is that it's very mistake friendly. And seeing, because I have problems with like sometimes I look at a shaky hand, and then just sometimes I just, you know, can't see what I'm doing.
Yeah,
unless I have like a magnifying glass and I make a lot of mistakes. I love the fact that I can just go in with a clean brush and just kind of blend that everything in or wipe it off.
It cannot be erased. Yep.
When I started messing with oil wash, I'm a late bloomer to a lot of stuff. Like I never would have given anybody the impression that I'm like ahead of the curve on, you know, cool new techniques or whatever. I'm not. I'm old. It takes me a while to catch up. But I just started doing oil washes like toward the end of last year, and I was just amazed because it solves so many of the things that make painting with acrylics frustrating. It lets you use the acrylics for everything they're really good at and nothing they're not. It's so awesome. And then I was just like, well, this is great and super versatile. And if I could do this, why don't I just do the whole model that way? I'm just going to try it. And then Marco is like, hey, guys, we're going to talk about how to do that this week. I'm sorry, Marco.
No, I can't understand. I can't understand.
No, I love it.
Figure out his accent.
He's like goofy
it.
Italian me. I love it so much. I want to hang out with that dude so bad.
I had a thermo professor in college that had that accent, and I will always think of thermodynamics every time I hear that.
It just makes me so happy. So cool.
I like it too.
He's such a great teacher.
But you think of the great classical painters, and that's where the oils are coming from. Like this
it's not
is
hurting
this.
Me. It's,
yeah. We're digging deep into these like classical, you know, traditional painting techniques. Everyone used oils back in the day because you mess up, you can fix it. But also, what the fuck was an acrylic, right? Like if I'm in you know 1659 and somebody pays me a bunch to paint a picture of a dead guy up on a cross.
I'm turning
just
this
heard a,
into
just a... heard a paintbrush in the background there. Yeah, was that you, Phil? Your paintbrush?
I'm painting.
We're a legit painting podcast. We paint while we record.
Wait, that's an option.
I'm not trying to turn it into like a Marco fan podcast or whatever, but
it already is.
Yeah,
the truth is
that because I'm turning into one.
That dude, seriously, like if you're not watching his videos, quit fucking up. He's fantastic. And he's the kind of, it's not just him, it's the kind of teaching that everybody needs. It's why-based teaching, it's resource-based teaching. It's not telling you how to do stuff, it's telling you why you might want to try this and giving you all the information you need to do it. And it's backing it up with classical art theory, which is amazing.
That's what it is,
because I'm pretty sure he's a scientist. So it's
that's the connection I'm making.
Okay, what's with the fucking scientists and being in this hobby?
Dude, you
got fucking Brandon
he rules
over
everywhere.
Here.
He rules.
Good God.
Art and science were both paid for effectively by the same patrons during the Renaissance. Yep. So it's not surprising that
musicians.
A lot of scientists are also great artists.
I think for me, I never learned any of this shit. So it's just like I knew old paintings are done with oil paintings.
You
but
have
I never
such
knew
an
why.
Intuitive understand. You have such an intuitive understanding of this stuff, though. Like I know you like to joke that you're like, oh, I'm the dumb brain here or whatever. But like seriously, like one of the reasons I've always liked looking at your stuff is because you just latch on to new concepts so fast. So I find it difficult to believe that you had like no background in it whatsoever.
That's just a lot of weed.
I mean, that's good.
That helps so much.
That
helps so
a
much.
Ton.
I've never taken an art class. Actually, I got in a huge argument with our high school's art teacher about like graphic design compared to art. And I was just like, you're fucking stupid. You don't know what you're talking about, dude.
I
like that you got extra Florida there for a minute. That was great.
Compared now, I mean, I'm the one that won the argument because of, you know, situations in life, but I wish that they would have at least said, hey, by the way, oil paint, you can fix your mistakes. You might want to learn that down the road.
They wouldn't have used it for that anyway.
The only thing I retain.
That's why I love modeling and minis and Gunpla and all this other nonsense that we have bothered to fill our time with for some reason. It's so innovative. Like we're using the oil paints have literally been around longer than like the medieval period. We're not even sure when we started using them. We've just always been using them.
And, oil paints are fucking old. They're old as dirt. Like oil paints were around. I mean, seriously, like the first ever paints were like plant dyes. Some of them were bugs. But then after that, you got into these like oil soluble pigments. And those were the ones that were replicatable. That's the thing that, you know, a lot of the big artists from the big studios, once they started to develop, really started to latch onto. And then they spread those throughout Europe. And so you have this huge, effectively it's tribal knowledge that it just sort of splintered off and became a community. Like
it is effectively
oil paints themselves are a community.
It's, Yeah, but it's been a thing that's been around forever, and damned if we don't still find interesting new ways. I mean, they're not new. People have been doing this for a while. That's the other thing about modeling is like it works in these weird cycles where we like rediscover techniques, and everybody's like, holy shit, nobody's ever done that. And the old guys are just sitting in the back like, I've been doing that since 75. I just moved on to an airbrush because you said it was cool, you bastard.
I did that in 1976.
Totally.
I think that's also like a big product of the surrounding environment and culture in that. Because like for miniatures, it's ingrained. Like you use acrylics, you use a paintbrush from the get-go. But Gunpla, you use an airbrush. Like
that's really a new development though. Like the original mini painters were using specifically oils. Like the reason that the reason John Blanche's stuff looks the way it does. Like have you ever seen an actual John Blanche mini? Not his paintings, but his minis are fucking amazing. The reason he got hooked up with these dudes back when they first got started was he was like one of the like vanguard of weirdo model making back then. He did all his stuff in oils. It's just that everybody started using acrylics because they were being marketed towards kids. Like they were being turned into games and products, and they were easier to use for a lot of reasons and still are easier to use for some reasons. That's another important thing to remember.
Here I am. I disagree. I disagree with you, Phil. I think that acrylics caught on because the bright colors are brighter. And there is an element of them which is easier to... they're easier to use because, yes, they're water-based. But honestly, in a lot of ways, they are much harder to use. It's harder to make a model look good with acrylics compared to oils.
No, it's very hard. They're easier to clean up. And they're not going to poison your kid.
Yeah,
but how do you use metallic oil paints? Because I have a tube of it, and it's a pain. Interesting. Yes.
You learn non-metallic metals because I have no experience.
Yeah,
because like I don't know, I got a bottle of it at like a hobby show. I was like, oh cool, I'll try it out.
How does it work?
It's like a glitter. Oils.
Yeah, huh.
It makes like sense. A glitter. I mean, you know, like just like oil is just pigment dissolved in a solvent. You know, I bet it's pretty much that. The pigment is just metallic.
But I think I could use it kind of in the way like Marco was in using it in thick. I was trying to use it like a wash, like a gunk wash.
Yeah.
Thinking, oh, it's going to get in the recesses. It's going to like it should be like a fine pigment.
Because and you're just getting chunks of sparkles in there.
Yeah, I did. I forget what I did. It was like it was a Star Wars blaster, and I did it over it, and it looked like Hello Kitty blaster after I was done with it.
Yeah, I believe it.
It was terrible.
No, man. I mean, they're other than the fact that it looks right, there's a reason that non-metallic metal was like the whole like concept of metallic paints. That's an acrylic concept. That's a
crazy thing though, is watching Marco do in a sense non-metallic metals with oils. It looks so much easier.
Oh, it's way easier. Well, like
it's because your blends get so tight.
Yeah,
you can actually the transitions. So a hard transition with oils is possible. You just swipe the brush once or twice.
Yeah, it's like a soft and it's transition,
right? A soft transition is
as
much
opposed
easier.
To 12 hours of blending on brush that
12,000 times. Area. It's so effectively. I mean that's metallics are their own sort of thing. There is a product that prop makers have been using for years called Rub and Buff.
Yep. Yeah,
Rub and Buff is a wax based metallic product, and I speculate that a metallic oil paint and Rub and Buff are probably gonna be similar because the carduba wax is nonpolar, just like the organic solvents used in the oil paints. I think that you should test out some of that metallic paint and let us know how it goes.
I non-scientifically concur.
Yeah.
Like for real, that's non-metallic metal. Like that entire style of painting literally comes directly from two-dimensional oil painting. That's where it's from.
Man. It's all connected. I mean, it's all together.
Right.
So the whole like, again, acrylics making densely gooey, like opaque pigmented metallics possible. So that's why using like the quote unquote true metallic metal style happened, is because it could. And it made it a lot easier than trying to do non-metallic metal paint jobs with, especially with acrylics. But yeah, if you're doing it with oils, that was a big part of the reason that before I saw this video and my head exploded, that I wanted to do all oils. Cause I was like, you know, I've been trying so hard, and I've talked about this with you guys before. I've been trying so hard to develop non-metallic metal skills. Cause that's really one of like the weakest parts of my repertoire. And I've been trying really, really hard to get good at it. And I just suck. I suck so bad at it. And it's because getting those short, sharp blends that Brandon's talking about that are absolutely the key to that style are so hard with acrylics.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's all of the guys that I've seen that pull it off well, and gals, please don't get it listed. Actually, more gals than guys in this case. But everybody I've seen that can pull that off is using acrylic painting methods that specifically mimic the way oil paints work, like the loaded brush, for example, where you're using like half one color and half another color dipped in the brush and using the brush to blend as you go. And that is that's completely mimicking the way that oil paint works.
When you extend the drying time of your paints, you are making it perform more like an oil. That's really the important. Yep.
Yeah. All the wet on wet blending I've ever done was the way I would paint oil on a canvas. Totally.
But, you know, so yeah, oils are great. Like I mentioned before, though, there are pretty big differences between oil pigments and acrylic pigments.
Huge.
And
you've
got to, there's a certain look you've got to be looking for when you use oils. Yes, you can get good blends. You would probably have trouble painting something bright yellow, for example. Yellow is a color that oils yellows, reds, oranges are a little bit tricky.
I mean, they're tricky in anything. That's 90% of the questions I answer about painting are about people that are trying to paint yellow and red.
Like, see, now couldn't you base it with pink like he did in the video?
And you can
blend off that,
or you can work your way through color relationships. Like for a yellow, you could start with like a warm yellow ochre, which is way more opaque than say like a canary yellow. It still has the component tones of the brighter yellow underneath it, so the light hits the color underneath and comes back through the brighter color and reinforces it, makes it stronger and covers better.
Here's where my brain thoughts are going, because I want to try this, is to do what he did in the video pretty close, like in not to what he actually did, but in the practice of using oils on a miniature or a Gundam and or sci-fi mecha, and doing that up to those steps to where a dry brush could be applied, matte varnishing it, doing a dry brush of a lighter, more intense pigment.
Man, you're not going to need it. Wouldn't
that be a way to kind of like get around that?
You'll be able to manually highlight, though. This is the real, you get a lot of good benefits out of this. Like a dry brush will give you a certain look, but if you have the drying time of an oil paint, you could manually go through and highlight every little piece you want to.
Yeah, you just add a lighter color and blend it as you go. Or in the case of what he was doing, he was actually combining both underpainting and a subtractive glazing method, where if you notice what he was doing was he was splashing a real thinned out coat of whatever color he wanted. And he was pretty sloppy about it. And he said so while he was doing, he's like, don't stress this. This is going to look crappy when you first do it, but watch what we do. He'd go through and wipe off almost everything that he applied, just like you're doing when you do an oil wash. And he was not only making that application smooth and creating a little bit of an initial blend to begin with, but he was also removing a lot of the upper coat of it. So he was actually creating a lot of the same effect that like your gal Dana is doing in her videos.
Yeah,
where she's doing the contrast glazes and all that stuff.
Like, yeah, that's where I got it from.
Yeah, it's the same concept. It's just you're doing it manually and you have all the control over it instead of letting the paint dictate it for you. Like the last several years have focused so much and there's been so much done. It's such an exciting time to be a nerd, really. Like there's so many new things being cooked up.
I think that every day. Yeah.
I'm so stoked about that. But the last several years have focused a lot on painters really getting a little bit better acquainted with the actual properties of their paint and what they can be used for. And the revival of the glaze over white technique like Dana's doing, the the, you know, the contrast nonsense, and then people like Dana coming along and being like, okay, but you can make this look good, and here's how, you know, like all this kind of stuff is, I'm losing it. The point is that we've been focusing on trying to figure out ways to make the paint work for us. Whereas now, bringing oils back into the equation, whether you're doing, you know, all oils, mostly oils, some oils for an oil wash, whatever, what you're doing is introducing an entirely different workflow, which is I can put this on and then I can take as much off as I want. And what I'm actually doing is painting with what I don't leave behind, which is awesome.
I am slightly stoned right now. staring.
You know, symbolically, we all are, right?
Symbolically, this whole podcast is fucking out of its mind. I am staring at an Ifrit, the purple one. I think it's a Schneid, is it? I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's all made up.
It's a dope model.
And I'm remembering his video where he base the colors a solid color.
Yep.
And I'm staring at this model. The plastic is based in a solid color.
It sure is.
If I wanted to keep these colors and kind of just, you know, use a brighter purple and use brighter, you know, mix some purple oils and build up to that highlighting and the whites, you know, you'll bring down with some washes and the metals, try some not. I could do this with just the pure plastic.
And
of course, some type of.
Yeah, you could. You could.
Isn't it the same theory?
Well, yes, it is.
It's yes.
You could use the color of the plastic. You will need something for that oil to grip to.
Well, that's we talked about that already. I learned that. That's in my brain compartment. It was all refuculated. I'm going to top coat it.
Is that what you're talking about? Yeah.
Yeah, doing a flat coat. And then, there's Japanese. Okay, I remember this now. I've seen a Japanese builder on Twitter that literally he just top coated the whole fucking thing and then just went to town with oils for
like
a day.
Yep, that's it. That's what you got to do.
And that's what I'm doing from now on.
The analog is gesso. So you know, before you paint an oil canvas, you gesso the canvas, you get a nice flat surface and
it's toothy,
a predictable.
Because like primer, I mean,
here's the downside to that though.
Okay.
On one hand, you'll have a real uniform, smooth, bright color base to start from, but it's not paint. And there's not going to be any interaction between your paint and that color. It's just going to be your paint over that color. Whereas so imagine if you started, if you completely reproduced that color
with that's what I plan on
contrast
doing.
Paint or whatever, just made it that color that the plastic is, as opposed to using the plastic's color.
Well,
like if you just painted it, then there would be an interaction between the paints and it would look a lot smoother and more natural, but there's going to be an obvious materials clash.
What he's saying is,
screen printing thing, Pantone matching is that's all we do all day. In the office. So I would be directly matching this plastic purple.
I misunderstood. I'm sorry. I thought you meant coating the plastic and then putting oils over the top. It would work.
But see, that's really going to help you, because if you start with a very solid undercoat, you won't have to work quite so hard on your blends, because the blend is effectively going to be a color modulation, not a color addition. That's going to help you.
Honestly, I am glad that you brought that up, Phil, because I'm sure there's a lot of people that went to, okay, I'm just going to slap some fucking oil paint on this weird color and it's going to look fucky. You got to kind of think, okay, I was thinking, and a good thought process for this was that, okay, you just, you know, if you don't want to go through breaking the, I always fucking hate breaking kits down. I want to paint them when they're fully a statue and that's it.
Yeah.
But if you don't want to do that, you don't want to fucking go through that process. But like mixing oils until you have a match with that color and then either building up or building down.
That is a way to do it.
That'd be fucking rad. That'd be cool. Oh, that'd be like a fun little experiment.
Well, and Brandon actually brought that up in the last episode too. We were talking about, you know, where the concept of glazing came from. And he was like, I'm pretty sure it harkens back to older oil painting methods. I was like, yeah, absolutely. Like they used to actually go through and just paint the entire painting in you know, monochrome or sepia or whatever, and then just glaze the oils over the top to do it. Like, this is nothing we're talking about here is new. We're just stopping being dumb and using it on the 3D objects instead of just the 2D ones.
Well, for really bright colors, they definitely did that. Yeah.
I've got a question for you too, and we're coming towards a close here. And I think this is to kind of bring it back into the serious mode, because like most stuff we talk about in the contest or the podcast, it's a lot of our personal experiences, what we see in these different mediums, cultures, and hobbies. Is that, do you think that, like I've seen, I mean, even recently with dry brushing, where people say it's an easy way out, is that something that's kind of deterring people from trying these methods like oil painting and different methods that have been around for literally thousands of years?
Well, with oils, do you mean that oil painting is considered to be an easy way out, like dry brushing?
Well, yes and no. I mean, for me, dry brushing is not an easy way out because method that I'm going is pretty much a very complicated, unnecessary.
Yeah, you're basically oil wash glazing buildup with dry pigments for some reason.
See, I strongly disagree with that. Yeah, brushing is not an easy way out. Right.
Yeah.
It's hard to do, right?
But I mean, I guess in general, of a lot of this stuff is like, to me, I'm thinking, let me kind of back up here a little bit. I am thinking from my brain of where I just learned that, hey, where this is a cool method that I can do something that I've been wanting to do, make it easier. And with my experience of making videos and shit, that if I also, I do this thing, I have a lot of fun and I want to share it with other people and say, hey, this is an easy paint method. There's going to be another side of that crowd that says, well, you're just taking the easy way out. Why can't you just airbrush your model?
The difference between what you're talking about and the attitude that you're talking about coming up against and this situation is that historically, dry brushing is usually one of the first things that an acrylic painter learns. It's the first easiest trick to pick up.
What?
That was the first thing I learned. Like,
it's true.
Because when I was learning how to paint, we were still doing, like, we didn't have pre-mixed acrylic washes. They weren't telling you to mix down paint to make washes with. They were like, here's your ink. And this is, you get one shot at this.
Actually,
it's going to make a complete mess out of stuff. This is like the expert level. They actually sold inks in a box called the Expert Citadel Color Set.
What? But,
oh, yeah.
You got chestnut ink. It was
hardcore.
Which was an ink.
But,
yep. Black
but
ink.
Here's
yep.
here's Ugh. The thing. The what you learned first, like in the little book that came with your box of dwarfs, you got your dwarfs and you got a guide that said, here's what you do. You paint this dude's beard brown, you paint all the armor silver, you wash it with black ink very carefully, because if you miss, it's gonna wreck the whole thing. And then you dry brush the shit out of this silver. And that's what you do. So that was literally the day one learning experience.
Like polishing the silver, yeah.
And like you've learned, dry brushing either can, just like any other technique, it either can be done really crudely in a way that does not reflect its best use, or it can be done in a really smooth, awesome way. Like you and I have both seen people work a dry brush that looked as nice as a progressive layer blend. But
see, to answer your question though, like the attitude that any technique is like lazy or is below another technique, or you know, is not the right thing to use in this situation. The question you should be asking yourself is, does this technique allow me to realize the concept that I have in my brain? And if the answer is yes, then who gives a fuck accomplished that goal?
Absolutely. And I was going at that a little bit roundabout, but where I was trying to land with it was
you were like three, five, 10 blocks. I saw that you were coming around. I was tracking you on your phone.
It's
you were on the cell
big.
Phone. You were coming around. And
nothing,
I was like, but it's right next door. Like
you're isolated.
Your sub was getting cold. Like by the time you got back, it was going to go bad. Like you were going to come back to rancid pickles. I did. I ate your sandwich, Bill.
I ate
your sandwich. It took you 10 weeks. It took you 10 weeks to get back to the topic.
But look at all the information.
It was all I had.
All the information was so good.
I'm in front of Subway waiting for you to come back.
Fucking orc dicks.
Sir, this is an Arby's.
Fucking orc dicks.
All right, for real though, the reason that you came across that attitude was that before, a lot of the quote unquote cheat methods or like shortcut methods or whatever resulted in a substandard finish where somebody would look at it and be like, oh, that was dry brushed. It's all chunky and dry and chalky, right?
If you can tell you got a problem.
Yeah. That's the difference between that situation and this one. This way of working with oils, we watched Marco make a competition standard model that would win any regional competition that we've ever been to, hands down, in 2 hours.
Yeah.
And he didn't do anything special while he was doing it. That's different. That's a game changer. That's something that results in a new standard, not something that could be seen as substandard. Anybody that calls that fucking paint job substandard needs kicked in the goddamn teeth. So
but the problem is they aren't calling the paint job substandard. They're trying to call the technique substandard. That doesn't make any sense.
That's dumb.
That's a made up thing. I think that it's because
if you can paint beautiful models in 2 hours, you should be doing that.
Well, I totally agree. I can only speculate why I see this in the community. There's this desire to put down people who do things differently than the way that we do them. You know,
that's
It's dumb. It's actually the enemy of progress.
It is.
Because you want everybody to do things the same way. Well, if this was hard for me and it's easy for Joel, then Joel must have a cheat technique. No, that just means that you suck and you got to get better at doing this.
Yeah. Or that it moved ahead without you. I mean, like, am I a little bit bummed that I spent the last 10 years getting really good at creamy acrylic blends? Like, maybe.
But we both did.
But I know how to do that now. And I also
did
know
one
how to
video
do this now.
From Marco shatter your universe.
I mean, yep, that's the thing though. Like, it's so good though that I'm not bummed. I'm just like, I can't wait to try
it. I'm excited.
Yeah. And if I don't like it, if it's not fun for me, I still know how to do this other thing. And I can combine the stuff I learned from that with this. Like, this is the beauty of all of it. It's this big, huge mass of tools that you can mess with and use however you want to.
Your technique toolbox doesn't fill up. You just learn new techniques. You don't have to throw out old ones.
Yeah,
you know, it's not like I can no longer do X because I learned Y. Come on.
And you should never be threatened by a new development. You should be excited by it. Like, embrace something, do something awesome.
Yeah, this one touched a nerve. That attitude is something that I see and immediately makes me angry. Because I use this hobby to relax, and I also judge pieces by how they look, not how they were made.
And that's the thing. I worry because, like, I think the first time I sat down with you guys, I did my obligatory old guy minute of riffing on fucking contrast paints. But I hope that it's clear that the reason that I viewed those as a negative, and I think I said this a million times anyway, but just, I don't like the marketing of it. I don't like the easy button sales pitch.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that's a complicated technique that can be developed into something really beautiful if you don't just slather it all over the place.
Yeah.
That's what I don't like. That's what hopefully the art nerds don't like, is they don't like somebody doing a half-assed job. Like, but you can use easy techniques that result in something amazing if you work them. Like, that's good. You're developing something.
If you recall, when you brought up contrast paints, I brought up deck stain.
Yep.
And the reason why is because
same concept. It was marketed the same way.
At the time, deck stain provided a better quality product than just straight blocking in base colors.
Yeah.
And so
we didn't even have acrylic washes yet.
We consider
acrylic
that
washes
to be
happen
a
because of
technique.
Deck state.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. I think, put everything into context. Deck stain is a huge part of this whole hobby.
Oh my God.
It brings it all together.
Yep.
Seriously. Actually, oh my God. That's, God damn it. That's brilliant.
Look at these nerds using whatever they find at the hardware store to make their stuff look better. That's what this hobby's about.
Seriously.
Just like make up a new thing. Somebody invented this. Somebody out there decided to dip their model in deck stain.
Oh my
to
God.
Do like an auto
dipping shape. Was the catalyst of the new generation of model painting.
Effectively, dipping
really was.
Is contrast painting. It's the same technique.
Dipping is Agrax Earthshade. Dipping is acrylic washes. Dipping
it is
Nuln
oil.
Oh my God.
The beauty that is Nuln oil was originated by dipping into super dark deck stain. Yeah.
Which then became Devlin Mud, which then became Agrax, which begat all the
actually,
others.
Actually, Agrax and Devlin and Nuln oil were three different. Well, Nuln oil was very dark, but Agrax and Devlin were different. Yeah, they're different colors.
I thought that. Well, I thought anyway.
Well,
there was a third one. There was also Ogryn flesh. Ogryn was also really good. I like Ogryn a lot.
These nerds are just going to talk about deck stain for the rest of the night. But where I was trying to get at with that whole thing is that don't get weirded out or like don't get turned off or honestly. If someone says, oh, man, dry brushing, oh, that's shit, or airbrushing, oh, boo-hoo, whatever,
dude,
don't knock it till you try it.
If the painters around you aren't encouraging you, no matter what, find other painters to hang out with.
Yeah.
Flat out.
That's the one thing I've learned over my many years is that those that want to halt your progress because they're scared of how their progression is not going.
Yeah, that's why.
It's not the camp that you want. You want people to be like, dude, you learned how to do that? That's fucking rad. Teach me. Or like,
or
you know,
that's awesome.
That
that's not the way I do it. I'll show you the way I do it if you want to. If not, just keep doing it the way you're doing it, man. It's going to be awesome. Yeah. You know,
ultimately, it doesn't matter. Don't ever tell anyone that they're wrong for doing a technique, and don't ever let anyone tell you that you're wrong for using a certain technique. All that matters is the final product.
Yep.
And more importantly, that you had fun. Yeah. It's supposed to be fun. It's just fun. Have fun.
I consider that to be part of the final product.
It is. You're right. You're right.
The fun meter going off.
I'll send you guys a bill. I'll send you a bill for the fun. It's fun. It's in the mail.
I don't know. I'm
sending you a bill for the sandwich.
Hey, Joel, can I borrow the cutting mat letterhead so I can send a bill for the fun?
Yes.
All right, thanks. Absolutely. Yeah, we only use that for very official announcements.
I'm going to need a sandwich invoice. A sandwich invoice for me too, please.
Because I did eat that, and I do apologize. But like I said, 10 weeks.
I need like... whatever.
Who orders a tuna club? That's the other thing. Come on.
Tuna club.
Yeah, that's for you, baby.
Anyways, and this
mayo.
Has been
bacon.
The
Come on.
Premonition of Paint, which is a side episode of the Cutting Mat podcast. Make sure you check out the Patreon. Make sure you check out our website. Brandon is not a fan of tuna club sandwiches.
It's what you get for eating another man's sandwich.
This episode was not sponsored in any way with Subway because we would never allow a company that has things called Tuna Clubs to.
This would be like an unsponsorship. Don't.
Yeah. Oh, as much
actually,
as I love
stay
this
away
bit,
from Subway.
I would never eat a tuna sandwich, just so we're clear on that.
That's why I. Yeah.
This is an anti Tuna Club sandwich.
I wouldn't even feed that to Brandon when I knew he was going to eat my sandwich. Like.
Full disclosure, I actually like a tuna sandwich occasionally.
All right, well, there you go.
Not every day. It's breath qualifications.
Do you like Orc Dicks every day, though? That's what we need
to
know.
Different, slightly different flavor. It is so...